Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Hey, troops, if you like coffee, and who doesn't, you may want to try Freedom One Coffee. It's run by an active-duty couple who love our nation and coffee. And everything, even the packaging, is amazing. Check out freedom1coffee.com. Well, here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Bob Green about honor flights. They honor senior military veterans. Then we'll meet Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival and review the movie of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. Now, it's a pleasure to introduce Bob Green. His official title is President of the Mid-Michigan Honor Flight. His group is part of the National Honor Flight Network. Thanks for joining us today, Bob.
Thank you, and thank you for having me, Denny.
Hey, this is fun, because I really believe in honor flights. Bob, tell us about your military service.
Graduated from high school in May of 1980, and 2 weeks later, I was at Fort McClellan, Alabama for one station unit training and went through my basic training and MP training. From there, I was stationed at Fort Bliss, Texas for 13 months, and then I transferred to Pforzheim, Germany, where I was a security guard on a nuclear missile site.
So you weren't bored?
No, I wasn't bored.
But I'm guessing that nobody tried to break into the nuclear missile site while you were there.
Yeah, they did.
Really?
We actually had an incident where we had a terrorist come up. At the time, he was part of the Biedermeierhof gang, and he actually came up and was scouting our security of our base, our missile site. I was the sergeant of the guard that day, and one of my guys that was in my squad recognized him from a poster that we had of the top 10 most wanted terrorists in Europe and pointed him out. And by the time the Polizei and the military police got there, he was gone, but they caught him 3 days later from information that they were able to develop that day.
Wow. Sounds like you and your team took your job seriously. Of course, back in those days, you better.
Yeah, we had some very large nuclear warheads. Our mission was that if World War III broke out, we were supposed to close the fold the gap. And so we had all of our missiles were aimed at that.
Well, I understand. I was stationed in Germany in the 70s, and we were thinking the same way, but we were infantry, not nuclear. Talk about honor flights. How did you hear about them or get involved with them?
I don't know where I was. One day my phone rang and it was my dad. My dad was a Korean War veteran. And he said, I might even have been up in the UP visiting him. And he asked me if I wanted to go with him on an honor flight. I had no idea what an honor flight was. I said, sounds like fun. So I didn't really think anything more of it. He called me a couple months later and said, hey, these are the dates of the honor flight. So I started to do a little research on it. And wow, this is a pretty cool organization that, you know, that they're going to honor these World War II and Korean War veterans by taking them to Washington, D.C. to visit the veteran service memorials. So I actually got to go with my dad as his guardian. We flew out of Escanaba and went to Washington, D.C. and visited the World War II Memorial, the Korean War Memorial, Vietnam Wall, the Changing of the Guard at Arlington. We got to go to the Iwo Jima Memorial. We got to go to the Air Force Memorial, and it was just an awesome, awesome day.
Isn't it amazing how wonderful things just sort of come your way? You know, if you'd been too busy or having a scrap with your dad or something, how much you would have missed. Hey, okay. So you found out about it, and I guess you just couldn't put it down then. You started becoming a volunteer, right?
So I was getting ready to retire and told my wife, I said, I want to volunteer for Honor Flight. So I was golfing with a friend of mine who I didn't know was involved in Honor Flight. And I told him, I want to volunteer for Honor Flight. And he said, you mean my honor flight? And I'm like, you don't have an honor flight. He goes, no, I'm on the board of directors. And I was like, oh, okay. Then I'd love to volunteer. He said, well, we'd love to have you. So we golfed a few more holes and we talked about different things and about different charitable organizations that I've been in and been involved in and fundraisers. And at one point he told me, he said, I don't want you as a volunteer. And I'm like, wow. He said, I want you to be on the board of directors with me. So 2 weeks later, I went on my first honor flight with Mid-Michigan Honor Flight, and that was it. I was hooked.
You know, it's amazing how that can happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know my story that I just volunteered to escort a World War II vet once. I'd heard some good things, but I had no idea, and I can't say no now either. So I'm not quite at the level you are, but wow. Okay, talk about the purpose of honor flights. Why do we have them? Who are they for? What do they do? Who pays for them?
So in 2004, a physician's assistant named Earl Morse was working in Ohio, and he was talking to one of his World War II patients, and he said, hey, you know, are you going to, now that the World War II memorial is done, are you going to go see it? And his patient said, I'd love to, but I can't afford it. So Earl got together with Jeff Miller, who's another person that worked in that area, and they decided that they would take these World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. to visit the World War II Memorial. So they had eight private, like little 3 or 4 seater Cessna airplanes. And they took, the first honor flight was the two of them and their buddies that were flying the airplanes and 16 World War II veterans. And that was the beginning. They did it to honor those veterans, to get them to see the memorial that honors their service to our country. And a lot of the World War II veterans didn't have the opportunity or have a way to get to Washington, D.C., so they started Honor Flight. And it has grown so much since then. There are currently hubs in 44 of the 50 states. And for the states that don't have a hub, there is the Lone Eagle program that Honor Flight National runs, that they will set up a flight in those states. They're doing one out of Hawaii. Hawaii doesn't have an honor flight hub, so they're doing a flight out of Hawaii coming up. But there are 100, and I believe it's 142 hubs right now nationwide.
That's amazing. You know, I knew that it was broad. I didn't have any idea how broad. But
well, we just celebrated taking our 250,000th veteran to Washington, D.C.
Wow. You know, that's a phenomenal number. And all this, because I know I've been on a couple, as you know, as an escort or whatever, at no charge at all to the veterans that go. I mean, there's food for them, there's transportation, everything around. What a wonderful thing to do. I was personally impressed by it, but I know that the veterans who are taken to be honored were truly honored and touched.
Yes, they, you know, you get to see a side of the veterans that you don't normally see. You get to hear stories that they don't normally tell. Because they're with 60 to 80 of their fellow veterans, they open up a little bit more than what they would to just their family.
You know, just like you and I will never know really what it's like to give birth to a child because we haven't done it. Veterans are like that too. They talk better with people who have been there and done that. Well, there's more to discuss about honor flights, and Bob's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com. Promo code FREEDOM. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Bob Green on honor flights. Bob, as I understand it, and even from your story, originally they were just for World War II vets, but that changed, right?
That's correct, Danny. Most of our World War II veterans have passed away. So as that was occurring and the number of World War II veterans on the waiting list for the flights was eliminated, we opened up our honor flights to Korean War veterans. And then several of the hubs went through all of their Korean War veterans. So now it's opened up to Vietnam veterans. So we take World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, and then terminally ill veterans of any era go to the top of the list.
Oh, that's a good thought. Certainly that's something that makes a great deal of sense. And certainly if I had a parent or a good friend, family member who was terminally ill, who was a veteran, particularly a combat veteran, I'd really want that for them. So that's a great idea. So it's my experience that every veteran who went, maybe not all of them, but everyone I was aware of, had an escort of some kind. Talk about that.
So the trip is about the veteran. It's all about them. We say we like to treat them like rock stars. And so every veteran that flies that's over 70 years old has to have a guardian fly with them. And basically their guardian is their caretaker for the day or for the event. So the guardian is there to, we take wheelchairs for everybody, every veteran that goes. Most of them don't need them, but you've been to the mall at Washington, D.C., and there's no benches. There's no place for the veterans to sit down when they get tired. So we make sure that they have a wheelchair with them. Well, you need somebody to push the wheelchair. So that's the guardian's job. The guardian's job is to make sure that the veteran stays hydrated and that they eat, they sit down when they need to. That's the guardian's job, is to just to be there and make sure that that veteran gets everything that they want and need for the time of their trip.
That's great. The wheelchair is a good idea. Better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it, right?
Exactly. And so veterans can pick their guardian. So if they have a family member or friend, can't be their spouse, but it can be a family member or a friend, grandchild, niece, nephew, whatever, they can name who their guardian is. If they don't have anybody, we have a list of volunteers that volunteer to go as guardians. And anybody can submit an application to be a guardian. And, you know, if we figure that you're a good fit, then we will make every effort to get you on a flight with the veteran.
That makes sense. That's how I started. I just said, hey, I'm available if you need somebody. And they did. And it was an amazing experience.
I tell everybody it's a life-changing experience.
I'm sure that's true. I didn't go anywhere in D.C. I hadn't already been, but I hadn't been there with a World War II vet who, I like to tell people I'm a big, rough, tough Army Airborne Ranger and I never cry, but sometimes my eyes sweat, and they sweat a lot on that trip.
We call that honor flight flu. Everybody gets it. If you can make it through the whole day without tears in your eyes at least once, you've got some, yeah.
We don't need to go there, but everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, and you know, you stop and think about, like, I mean, I've seen so much history in the flights that I've been on, and we've got one scheduled for June 7th out of Grand Rapids. We'll be staying at Ferris State University on the 6th. We fly on the 7th. We come back that night. We'll go back to Ferris and spend the night again. And then on the morning of the 8th, we release the veterans. We've got two 100-year-old World War II veterans, and one of them is a Pearl Harbor survivor.
Wow. Yep. If we can get World War II vets that are still healthy enough to leave and travel, anything we can do to honor them is not enough.
We've got 13 of them signed up for this flight.
Fantastic.
I didn't think there were 13 of them left in Michigan that hadn't gone on an honor flight, but yeah, we've got 13 of them going. Just some awesome, awesome experiences and stories. And I've talked to Marines that were at Iwo Jima. I've talked to soldiers that were at Normandy on D-Day, sat down and had dinner with them. Just the history is unbelievable.
You couldn't find that to buy it and pay for it if you tried. It's not out there. You just got to volunteer at the right time at the right place.
And it's going away every day.
Yes, sir.
Learn more of it every day.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Bob Green about honor flights. Bob, sum it up for us. What are the key points you'd like all our listeners to take away from our conversation today?
If you know a World War II, Korean War, or Vietnam veteran, or a terminally ill veteran of any era that has not been on an honor flight, please make every effort to get them signed up. You can go to Honor Flight National, to their website, and there is a link there to the hubs. It is www.honorflight.org. And on there is a map. They can click on that. It'll take them to their state, and then they can figure out which hub is closest to them and sign those veterans up. Our website is www.midmichiganhonorflight.org. And there's an application, an online application that people can click on to get a veteran signed up. But there's also a tab on there that they can click to sign up as a guardian. Honor Flight is a 501c3 charitable organization nationwide, and every Honor Flight that flies is flown by donations and by fundraisers. And there are no paid staff on Honor Flight. So every penny that is donated to Honor Flight stays in that hub and is used to take the local veterans to Washington, D.C.
That's fantastic. And just as a note, this is for all veterans. They don't have to have been in combat or anything like this. If they made themselves available to serve our nation and to fight if necessary, they're eligible. They're veterans. They can go, right?
That is correct. Yep. They don't have to be combat veterans. They don't have to serve in a theater operation as long as they serve during that period from basically right now it's the beginning of World War II to the end of Vietnam, 1975. You know, the discussion is out there that after we've eliminated the Vietnam veterans, we are going to continue to take Cold War, Gulf War, Enduring Freedom, the Afghan War. Every veteran is going to be afforded the opportunity to go on an honor flight.
Awesome. Bob, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. But thank you for what you're doing now. God bless you, brother. I'm glad we're friends.
Thanks, Denny. And thank you for having me on. I would like to thank every veteran out there for your service to our country and for what you gave up, and know that your service means something to someone.
Yes, sir. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Diane Raver and review the movie of the month, then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Groups, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 26 with each arm twice, then take a break but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Day 3 Creation is a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products. Our Get Relief, Give Relief program sees that 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing service dogs at no cost to disabled veterans to help restore their physical and emotional independence. Giving is an expression of our thankfulness and praise to God as we recognize that everything we have belongs to the Lord. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. It's a great pleasure to welcome back Diane Raver, the Front Lines of Freedom team member from the Garden State Film Festival. She finds interesting films for us every month. And I think she's about recovered from the film festival that ended 2 months ago or so. Welcome back, Diane. Are you frisky and back to normal?
I am, Denny. I'm back to my old self. Thank you for asking. It was quite remarkable. Everybody came out in person again. And of course, we were delighted to see that. Thank you for having me this morning. Of course, it's always an honor and a privilege.
Hey, we're friends and teammates. How much better can it get? Now, Our Kind of Love, the movie for this month, not a lot of people are able to see it because my website was sort of messed up. So I think we'll put it back up in September so people can see it, because it's really an interesting movie. What attracted you to it?
Well, it's a sweet film. And again, our goal is to get people thinking, and it's about military. Our films are basically about military or other things of interest to your listeners, but also about international affairs. And I thought it was a sweet story about different cultures and how they handle different situations. I mean, we in the West don't pay much attention to arranged marriages, but it's still very common in the rest of the world. And it was a sweet film to see how tradition collides with, you know, modern day society.
Indeed, it does. And your point's really well taken. We Americans reasonably think everybody else is like us, but we're very different than much of the rest of the world, particularly when you get into the third world.
Exactly. And different cultures and religions and all that stuff have different traditions, which they still hold to, despite what we consider modern. And who's to say who's right or wrong? I mean, you know, they have wonderful, long, happy marriages with some arranged marriages. So,
yeah, it's pretty awkward to say my culture is better than your culture.
I would say yes.
Now,
I would
agree with that. If somebody's culture involves killing people, okay, well, I could put that part down.
Yes.
But marriages and eating and all the, there's so many different ways. Anyway, this was a very gentle transition. So, as I said, we only had a couple of responses from listeners, but the first comment was, gee, I saw a fish swimming in a tank in a restaurant. Yeah. And then a lovely Afghan lady sitting at a table in a restaurant. She's joined by a man who is apparently an Afghan, but he lives in London. And she apparently has been in London for a few days or a week. Interesting situation.
Right. Well, obviously, she came to because of the arranged marriage. She would not have traveled to London without that pre-arranged.
Of course, that's not obvious at this point in the movie. There's just this nice-looking lady sitting there, and his guy joins her.
Right.
It could have been anything, but it quickly shows that this is their first meeting, and I can't even imagine going to a restaurant and introducing myself to some lady that I'm going to marry that I've never seen before, nor has she seen me.
But again, as we said, it's more common in other cultures than
you
might think. Yeah.
And apparently she speaks no English. So she says that she'll have whatever he has on the menu. He tells a joke. She doesn't get it. Culture issues. He invites her to take off her head cover, but she doesn't want to, so she doesn't. What I thought was funny, personally, was she mentions that there must be a lot of thieves here, as many people have dogs.
Right.
He laughs and explains pets, again, a culture thing.
Right.
This is so much about culture And neither one is right or wrong. It's just different. And understanding that is part of understanding the world we live in, right?
I agree 100%.
Then he gets a call on his cell phone, which he ignores at first, but then he leaves the table to take it. And that's when the...
That's wherein lies the rub.
It does. And in one respect, I didn't see anything about that, because at that point, it wasn't clear what their meeting was exactly. It looked like it was apparently a date. And then he had ordered sushi, and then it came, and she wasn't sure how to eat it. But Oriental lady saw her confusion and role modeled how to eat sushi with chopsticks. That was fun. And that is also just good people helping other people and letting other people help them.
Yeah, there are good people in the world, and we have to remember that, especially in lieu of current events.
And then it happens. She goes to look at the fish tank. He hears her talking. It's obviously a woman that he is, I guess, breaking up with. And they have a little confrontation. And then it becomes clear that she came to London to marry him, the arranged marriage. They discuss the way, the Afghan way and the English way of getting a spouse. Her hand is on the table. He reaches out and touches her hand. She pulls away. He asks, can we start over again?
Yeah, I thought it was sweet.
That was awesome. And from the looks on her face, the answer was going to be yes, but we don't know.
Right.
So, and it was a really fine orientation, not just to the Afghan culture, but to many, many in the Middle East. That's a common situation.
Exactly.
And it's part of the world we live in. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, where we're reviewing the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Diane, we've got a couple of minutes. Talk about the film festival and how people can plug in, because frankly, it's time to start thinking about plugging in, isn't it?
Well, also, if you know a filmmaker, a composer, or an actor, our call for entries is open right now. It stays open till the 1st of November. So the films are pouring in. Please tell them to submit at gsff.org.
Garden State Film Festival, gssf.org.
gsff.org.
Now, the movie of the month, we've picked that for next month. What's the name of it?
It's called Monmouth County 9/11 and its Aftermath.
You'll want to see it. It's going to be interesting. And it's about the American culture.
It absolutely is, and how we respond in an emergency situation. It's a very sweet film in its own way. Of course, it talks about 9/11, which for our community, being so close with so many commuters, was tragic, and how we pulled together to try and aid the first responders. Very proud of my little community here in New Jersey.
We really do have to continue to respect, honor, and support our first responders. Where in the world would we be in any kind of a crisis without them?
Isn't that the truth?
Amen there. Thank you, Diane, for your wonderful efforts as a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I love the movies. I love our times talking about it. This is great.
Well, it's my greatest honor and privilege. So thank you for having me, and I wish everyone a great summer, and we'll see you in June.
Yes, you will. Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. You can reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. I want you to do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Navy vet Sam was horrified at your discussion about the lack of freedom of religion in our military. What's wrong with our military and our country? This is terrible.
It sure is terrible, Sam. Our federal government is, once again, showing its disdain for our God, our Constitution, and our citizens. We citizens have to do something about it.
And Navy mom Susan really enjoyed hearing from the American Legion National Commander. She really enjoys it when you interview him each year.
Susan, I've been a member of the American Legion for a long time. It's a great outfit. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, on June 2nd, 1865, in an event that is generally regarded as marking the end of the Civil War, Confederate General Edmund Kirby Smith, commander of Confederate forces west of the Mississippi, signed the surrender terms offered by Union negotiators. With Smith's surrender, the last Confederate army ceased to exist, bringing a formal end to the bloodiest 4 years in U.S. history. The Civil War began on April 12, 1861, when Confederate shore batteries under General Pierre Beauregard opened fire on Union-held Fort Sumter in South Carolina's Charleston Bay. For 34 hours, 50 Confederate guns and mortars launched over 4,000 rounds at the poorly supplied fort, and on April 13, Major Robert Anderson, commander of the Union garrison, surrendered. 2 days later, President Abraham Lincoln issued a proclamation calling for 75,000 volunteer soldiers to help quell the Southern insurrection. 4 long years later, the Confederacy was defeated at the total cost of 620,000 Union and Confederate dead.
Yeah. And on 30 May, 1868, by proclamation of General John Logan of the Grand Army of the Republic, that was the Union Veterans Organization, the first major Memorial Day observance was held to honor those who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion. Known to some as Decoration Day, mourners honored the Civil War dead by decorating their graves with flowers. After World War I, folks began to honor the dead of all wars on this day. And in 1971, Congress declared Memorial Day a national holiday to be celebrated on the last Monday in May.
On May 31st, 1941, during World War II, but before the U.S. entered the war, the last of the Allies were evacuated after 11 days of battling a successful German parachute invasion of the island of Crete in the Mediterranean. Crete was now Axis-occupied territory. On the morning of May 20, some 3,000 members of Germany's division landed on Crete, which was patrolled and protected by over 28,000 Allied troops and an almost equal number of Greek soldiers. The German invasion, although anticipated, was not taken seriously. The real fear was of an attack from the sea. Those initial 3,000 parachutists were reinforced by an additional 19,000 men arriving by parachute drop, glider, and troop carrier. The Allies remained optimistic. Many of the German soldiers who dropped from the sky died or were injured on impact. The rest were undersupplied and inexperienced. But by May 26, British General Bernard Freyberg, commander of the defense of Crete, already reported that their position was hopeless. Evacuation of Allied troops began on the 28th. By the night of the 31st, the last of the Allies that would make it out had left the seaport of Sfakia. 5,000 men would be left behind in the hands of the Germans. The total loss of Allied land soldiers was 1,742. A further 2,265 sailors were lost at sea. Three cruisers and six destroyers had been sunk. The Germans suffered a loss of about 4,000 men. Strangely, Hitler, despite the victory, considered his losses too great to pursue further gains in the Mediterranean.
And on 30 May 1942, during World War II, a 1,000-plane raid on the German city of Cologne was launched by Great Britain. Almost 1,500 tons of bombs rained down in 90 minutes, delivering a devastating blow to the Germans' medieval city, as well as its morale. Air Marshal Harris, commander-in-chief of the Bomber Command, planned Operation Millennium. It was his goal to prevent significant losses of Royal Air Force bombers by concentrating air attacks in massive bomber raids, overwhelming the enemy by numbers, and delivering decisive, crippling blows. Harris would need to beef up his relatively small number of 416 first-line aircraft needed, though, so he added second-line and training squadron bombers, creating an air force of 1,046 planes. On the night of May 30th, Cologne was besieged. 600 acres of the city sustained heavily damaged. 45,000 Germans were left homeless. 469 were killed. The chemical and machine tool industries, the main targets of the raid, were rendered useless. The cost to the British, 40 bombers, or less than 4% of the total that participated. British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who approved the raid, telegraphed President Franklin Roosevelt the next day, quote, "I hope you were pleased with our mass air attack. There is plenty more to come," end quote.
And on June 1st, 1990, at a superpower summit meeting in Washington, D.C., President George H.W. Bush and Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev signed a historic agreement to end production of chemical weapons and begin the destruction of both nations' sizable reserves of them. According to the agreement, on-site inspectors from both countries would observe the destruction process. The treaty, which called for an 80% reduction of their chemical weapon arsenals, was part of an effort to create a climate of change that would discourage smaller nations from stockpiling and using the lethal weapons. First developed during World War I, most countries in the world were in possession of the technology needed to build chemical weapons by 1990, and some, such as Iraq, had engaged in chemical warfare in preceding years. The U.S. and Russia began destroying their chemical weapons arsenals in the early 1990s. In 1993, the U.S., Russia, and 150 other nations signed a comprehensive treaty banning chemical weapons. The Senate ratified the treaty in 1997.
And that's military history for today. And it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip. What do you have this week?
Well, all of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a sheriff in Florida applauded a motorcyclist for ending a road rage incident by pulling a gun on a knife-wielding driver. The alarming confrontation was caught on video by the motorcyclist's wife. The video shows a man with a knife threatening the motorcyclist before trying to slash him once. At that point, the motorcyclist reached into his vest and pulled a pistol out and pointed at the driver, who immediately backed away and called 911 to report that a man had just pulled a gun on him. Responding deputies viewed the video and arrested the knife-wielding driver. The motorcyclist who pulled the gun was set free. The driver who called 911 was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Thanks, Colonel. Now, this is an unusual scenario because, in general, criminals don't usually call 911 to get help from the police. However, when the criminal does call 911, it definitely muddies the facts. This was a pretty black and white incident, but because the knife-wielding attacker was the first to call police and was able to give his version of the story, the responding officers didn't know the truth about what really had happened. The motorcyclist and his wife did some things right as well as some things wrong. Let's go over both of them now so all of us can learn from their experience. First, this incident started out as a mutual combatant scenario. After digging further, I found out that both vehicles voluntarily pulled over and engaged in heated conversation. The motorcyclist had a pair of brass knuckles, and the truck driver was brandishing a knife. A better choice for the motorcyclist would have been to keep driving while his wife called 911 and directed the police en route so they could do their job. And second, many life and death fights begin as verbal arguments and escalate to violence. I watched the video, and it was obvious that both men were angry and neither were trying to de-escalate the encounter. They were both swearing and yelling at each other. Screaming and swearing at someone rarely calms them down. A better idea would have been to speak calmly and politely. He could have said something like, "I'm sorry, sir, if you feel like I cut you off, but I certainly didn't mean to do that. Maybe we should just give each other the benefit of the doubt and move on." Sometimes simply asking a question gets the other person to think and slows down their aggression. This is a self-defense technique that we call verbal judo. It can be highly effective, but only works if you remain calm and rational. Third, the motorcyclist was legally armed, and that gave him the advantage he needed over the man who was slashing at him with a knife. If he hadn't pulled his gun, it's unlikely the knife-wielding attacker would have ceased his attack. And finally, the big hero of this story is the wife who took the video. She recorded what really happened, and because of her video, her husband was exonerated, and the real criminal went to jail. It's always a good idea to video the incident if you can safely do so. Otherwise, it's just your word against a criminal. Front Lines of Freedom salutes the motorcycle mama and her husband for a job well done. Thanks to them, one more violent felon is behind bars.
Yes, sir. Our movie of the month is Our Kind of Love. We just reviewed it. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, get the blog, and watch it for free for the rest of the month.
Next week on Front Lines of Freedom is our 15th anniversary show. Former Director of National Security Rick Grenell will review our nation's challenges. And two of our board members will interview our host, Colonel Danny Gillum, on the occasion of his nomination for the Michigan Hall of Honor. And the real founders of Front Lines of Freedom, Josh Lang, Colonel Danny Gillum, and Phil Tower, will discuss how this all started.
Yeah. Well, our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of the show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom on this Memorial Day weekend. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.